Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Tommy. Guess what I was able to do? One of the few journalists in North America to be able to do this.
Pay your bills.
That's true. Yeah, I did pay my bills. But more importantly, I got to fly to Madrid for one day, basically, and drive the new Nissan Ariya. It's their new ground-up electric car.
Very cool. And in this episode, we're going to talk about everything that we've driven recently, talk about some cool stories and stuff that has happened around the office, because there's a lot of interesting vehicles kicking around, including the Mustang Mach-E GT, the Toyota RAV4 Prime, the new Hyundai Santa Cruz long-termer, and a bunch of other fun stuff.
Yeah, so Nissan did something interesting. They had an international first drive of the Ariya, but because I guess in Spain you can take a prototype car on the road, they did it on the track. And in order to kind of simulate driving conditions on the track, they put cones out. So they had like a mountain course, a city course, and then like an autobahn course. And you know what that managed to do?
What did that do?
Get almost every journalist sick on the drive around the track. Because now, not only are we driving around a twisty track, but we're driving around a twisty track trying to navigate twisty cones, Tommy. So everybody got out of the car feeling pretty, pretty nauseous.
So my question is, if you couldn't drive a prototype vehicle on the road in Spain, why have the event in Spain and not like Texas where you can drive anything on the road at any time?
Well, because this was a world debut or a world launch, and so they had media from around the world there. We were together with the Germans who came up after us and the Norwegian countries. The Swedes and the Norwegians were there. But they got to drive other Nissans that we don't get as well. So they had other cars like the Nissan Micra, which we don't get, or the X-Trail, which I think is our Rogue, if I'm not mistaken, or the Qashqai, which is our Rogue Sport.
Why couldn't you drive them?
Because they were European spec cars, and their suspension is tuned differently. Their engine choices are different, so they get a lot of like decent diesels that we don't get, right? Because Europeans love their diesels.
So what, an American is not allowed to drive a European vehicle?
Like, well, no.
Our bottoms would collapse the suspension by just gracing the driver's seats.
If they're not selling them here, they figured we.
It's cool. I want to drive a Micra.
Hell yeah, I would love to drive a Micra. But the American press team, PR team from Nashville, didn't want to feel like, you know, all of a sudden there are going to be all these reviews that popped up around the world of the Ariya. And, you know, since we're getting it this fall, right, we have none. And so they selected a very small group of journalists, and I was lucky enough, thank you, Nissan, to be one of them. They flew us to Madrid basically for, like, you got there like on a Sunday. We drove on a Monday and flew home on a Tuesday. So that's a long way to go. And then, of course, it rained cats and dogs the whole time. So we were there during basically a torrential downpour. So apparently it does rain in Spain on the plane. You know that song?
I do not.
No? No? It rains in Spain.
Like a 50s song?
It's like a, I don't know, it's like a...
what are you talking about? No,
the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain. I think that's like a song from Sound of Music. You never heard that? Just generational?
Let's see. Okay, I'm looking it up. I think it's called My Fair Lady.
Yeah, it's from My Fair Lady. That's right. The rain in Spain.
1956. So you probably listened to it in college.
Yes, that's right. I was... I was 25 and 56 when I was listening to that song. It was from My Fair Lady. But apparently, it does rain there a lot. And so it was pretty interesting. You know, I mean, obviously, Nissan was one of the first companies to go electric with the Leaf, right?
Yep.
And one could argue that they didn't exactly set the world on fire with the Leaf, and that's because they still have tax credits, so they didn't actually burn through their tax credits with the Leaf. And that means they haven't sold 250,000 of them, right?
Well, I would argue that... they probably did do a good thing by not setting the world on fire, unlike General Motors with their Bolt, but, you know,
all right.
Story for another day.
Oh, GM, sorry if you're listening to this. That's Tommy, not me. Send all your correspondence.
Well, I thought the Nissan Leaf was the best-selling EV globally in the entire world.
Globally? Mm-hmm. Until the Tesla 3, Model 3 surpassed it.
But for a long time, it held that crown.
But didn't sell all that well here in America. However, they did point out in their media presentation that in the last month, Leaf sales are up like 300%.
Well, makes sense.
I wonder why, huh?
Yeah. They sold 577,000 Leafs globally by February of 2022. That's a lot of Leafs.
Yeah, Nathan has one.
Yeah. People like Leafs, actually.
Yeah.
People that own them, they really like Leafs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can go into the whole Leaf story, but let's talk about the Ariya, which is, you know, their first... after the Leaf ground-up electric car.
Some would say their second ground-up electric car.
Yes, after the Leaf, yeah. And it's rolling on 20s, dude. I think it's got 20s.
So why didn't they call it, like, the tree or the branch?
I don't know. That's a good question, yeah.
Ariya mean? Is there, like, a meaning behind Ariya?
You know, every time I see Ariya, I think of a hotel in Vegas. But now it's a car. What is unique about the Ariya... Well, it's hard because it's a mid-sized crossover.
According to babynames.com, the name Ariya is primarily a female name of American origin that means a ray of hope.
There you go.
That's pretty cool.
It's a ray of hope. You know what? You've been to Japan. You're a big fan of Japanese things, all things Japanese. Mm-hmm. You know what the inspiration for this car was?
The Dustbuster.
No, it wasn't. Look at it. Can you guess what the inspiration? It kind of has that look to it. Something that is extremely fast, extremely quiet, and very somewhat luxurious. That is a form of public transportation in Japan.
The bullet train.
Exactly. You got it. So that's what inspired the Leaf. It was the bullet train. You can kind of see that.
No, I do not see that at all. It does not look like that.
The bullet train has that big nose, right? And then...
Well, the bullet train looks like a duck. And
this looks like a bullet train. So the bullet train inspired him, something very quick and very luxurious and at the same time very serene, right? Because you're going like 300K on a bullet train and yet it's very serene. So that's what they were going for. And then they also used, and I can't pronounce it, so I'm not going to even try.
They did not accomplish that, I'm sorry.
They also
with the design and this thing.
They also used, there's this Japanese lantern that has this very intricate woodworking. Mm-hmm. And so they used that design. You can kind of see it in the grill. And when you get inside, everything has got this kind of hand artisan woodworking like Japanese lantern design language. And the coolest thing in there, I think, is this little electronic glove box that like slides out with a push of a button.
Yeah.
And you could put your phone in there and hide it. Or if you're in Texas, you can put your Bible and your gun in there.
Well, I'm not sure Nissan wants to hear that. As much as I don't like...
Why not? It's Texas.
First of all, you think they're going to be selling a lot of rose gold Ariyas in Texas? Truck country? America? Walmart?
That's a good question. That's a good question. They may or may not be. I don't know. There's probably a lot of people in Austin who will be buying Ariyas.
I think that the exterior on this is not a very attractive machine, but the inside is really cool. I love like kind of the floating, airy concept. I love the two-spoke steering wheel and the big screens and kind of the open poreness that they have.
Yeah, the other thing they did was they took it looks like wood, and then they put these haptic buttons behind the wood, and you can't see them until you turn the car on.
Yeah, I don't like haptic buttons, but that's a cool way to do it. I think it's a really beautiful interior. I love the seats. And did it drive nice?
Well, I'll tell you that in a second. Look where the charging port is. What is different from that, from the Leaf?
The Leaf has on the nose.
Yeah, and they moved it. That was a very controversial decision on the part of Nissan. They moved it away from the nose, and they also got rid of CHAdeMO.
Yeah, that was a big change for sure.
So now it's CCS in Europe, but still CHAdeMO in Japan, and of course CCS here in America.
Yeah, they're really big in CHAdeMO in Japan.
Yeah, so let's talk numbers. You've got two batteries that are possible in the vehicle. Usable 63 kilowatts. They didn't give us the entire number, but usable 63 or I think 87 kilowatt.
Kilowatt hours.
Yeah. So either 63 usable or 87 usable.
Mm-hmm.
Either front wheel drive or dual motor all wheel drive, depending on which one you choose, and they'll be available hopefully this fall. And 150 kilowatts of maximum charging. And the unique thing about this electric car, Tommy, for all you electric car fans out there, is that Nissan says it can sustain 130 kilowatts of charging in its entire curve. Now, I think that number is very squishy because, we've done a lot of electric car charging and we never able to maintain a high rate at any, public charging station. It always depends on where the moon is, apparently, because there's so many factors that determine that. But Nissan says in under perfect conditions, or maybe not, you can get 130 kilowatts of power in there for a sustained amount of time.
So very cool stuff, too. 87 kilowatt hours usable with liquid cooling, which is fantastic.
Yes, they got rid of the air-cooled Leaf batteries.
That was the biggest issue with the Leaf batteries, especially from longevity problems, right, where you see the big degradation. It's because it was all air-cooled. But this is now liquid-cooled, which is fantastic. I think the CCS is a great move here in the States. Get away from CHAdeMO, which is finally starting to die out. And then they're saying that the 63 kilowatt hours is going to be available at a later date.
Yep, and no frunk.
No frunk, huh?
No. They said they moved the HVAC into the front area of the car where normally the frunk would be. So you open up that the hood, and all you see are orange cables and inverters and all kinds of electrical bits and pieces, but no frunk, unfortunately. But you do have, a lot of room. It's one of those cars that's Nissan would say, and I agree with it, it's a size of a Rogue, but with the interior of a Murano. So it's kind of bigger on the inside than on the outside.
Did they let you open up the front, or do you have to go to a dealer?
I just pulled it.
Like
Mercedes. I just pulled a little latch and popped it open. I'm like, yep, a lot of scary orange cables. Don't want to touch those.
I mean, I think that there's a little bit of NSX in the front end. And then that is...
They said those headlights are the thinnest in the biz, 20 millimeters. That's how tall they are, this big, the size of a chiclet.
Why can't we have a normal-looking electric car? Just a conventional...
I think the Golf tried that. It didn't work, the e-Golf.
But that was a compliance car. That was a gas car that you converted.
I think they tried.
I would love to see, a fresh, normal electric car.
It's kind of cool, that whole LED in the front, that the one that looks like a boomerang, the turn signal, and that all lights up. That's pretty cool.
It just feels like a blob, the car, I know I understand the aerodynamics are a big deal, but I just wish we'd have a normal, sporty-looking electric car.
Anyway, if you guys want to see my first drive review, we've got two. I put up just a one take over a TFL car, and right now, by the time this airs, we'll probably have a much more in-depth review over at TFL EV, or go to tfl-studios.com to see all of our content in one place. And by the way, we're refurbishing TFL-Studios. We're making it much more user-friendly, Tommy. It looks like something for kindergartners right now.
Okay.
Big blocks of pictures, and I'm tired of that, so I want to make it more newsy and less kiddy. And you can see how everybody got sick driving around a cone course on a race course.
Does it drive nice?
It drives like an electric car.
So it's probably pretty fast.
It's this one was a 63. This is a European one, and I'd say it was a 0-60 time of maybe 7 seconds. So I would say it was leisurely for an electric car. Nissan's saying that when you get to the 87 kilowatt hour usable battery, you're going to get about 5 seconds 0-60. They're all wheel drive, right? This was a front wheel drive. By the way, in case you're looking at buying one of these, 50 to 60K. Ish.
Okay.
Ish.
I think it's going to be cool. I do think it's going to be a pretty nifty looking little EV.
Yeah, and it was interesting, like I say, to be in Madrid and to go and drive an electric car in Madrid. I was really shocked by some of the coolest cars. I did a little bit of Madrid car spotting. So we got to go on a little tour of Madrid the day before we drove this. Want to know some of the cool cars I saw?
Yeah, what did you see?
We did. So I was with a bunch of people who are like specialty, like Tom Malagni, you know him from
State
of Charge. Mm-hmm. You know ES4 Electric, Alex.
Yeah, yeah.
He was there with his videographer. And then there were some like other like was it Jerry Riggs Everything?
Yep.
He was there. I'm just trying to think of like the electric car people that were there. So on our bus tour of Madrid, we decided to play a little bit of a game and see how many electric cars we could spot. So we did spot the usual stuff, like Model 3s were pretty much everywhere. Well, not, I shouldn't say everywhere. A fewer than you see here in Boulder. But they were pretty ubiquitous in terms of electric cars. But guess what I saw?
What did you see?
I saw a Honda E.
Okay.
That was pretty cool. And guess what else I saw?
What else?
An Emmy.
Oh, nice. Parked you found an Ami.
Ami. I parked on the street. That's that little funky. So that was pretty cool to see one, like, in the wild in Spain. And then, you know, the usual Leafs, the usual things that you would expect you would see. A lot of Hyundais, actually. As you can see in this picture that we're looking at, Hyundai N was all over, plastered all over the racetrack.
I think it's a an interesting thing how Europe is so far ahead compared to the States on their electrification.
I don't know if Spain is, dude. The one thing our tour guide said is that, you know, Spain has its indigenous car manufacturer called SEAT or SEAT.
Mm-hmm.
She said that, you know, you think if you're in Spain, you'd see a lot of SEATs, but the Spanish buy everything. You know, they just buy whatever they like. So I saw a lot of Renaults and I saw a lot of Citroëns. I was looking for a Twingo. That was the only one electric car that I didn't see.
The Twingo?
Yeah. Is that still being made even?
I think the Twingo's a gas car, isn't it?
What's the one that's electric?
The Zoe.
The Zoe. I was looking for a Zoe. Sorry. I was looking for a Twingo, too, but I was looking for a Zoe. Mm-hmm. Did not see any Zoes driving about.
Well, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? All right. So, like I said, head on over to TFL EV or TFL Car if you want to get a firsthand experience, if you're looking at potentially buying one. I think, like, you're right. The interior is much nicer than the exterior. You know, Nissan has been promising this car for a long time now, right? We've seen it at various auto shows. So I'm kind of like, just bring it. At this point, we're beyond almost like waiting for it. Now it just has to hit the market. And with all the supply chain issues and all the chip issues, I think Nissan is also struggling to get them out the door. But the sooner the better, because, you know, we're seeing a lot of electric cars hitting the market right now that are going to be early mover advantages that are going to start taking on the Tesla dominance in our country. So let's talk about another one of those, and let's talk about the Ford Mach-E. We just had one at the office. Tell me about it, Tommy.
Well, we had the Mustang Mach-E GT, so it was a fast one. Yeah. We had it for a week. And it is the sporty version of the Ford's all-electric crossover.
So it's like a $60,000 Mach-E, right?
Yeah.
It's got the GT badge on the back. But it doesn't have – ours didn't have the performance suspension.
No, so it wasn't the performance package, but it was the standard Mach-E. So like the performance, you get the adaptive dampers. You get a little bit more oomph, I think, out of the front motor is what they do in the performance. Different wheels. We had the my friend Sophie even calls them the flower wheels.
Okay.
I don't know. I kind of liked it.
I was shocked because me and Nathan got to sit behind the wheel and do a buddy review. I was shocked just how tight it is. You know, me and Nathan are big guys. We're big boys, as I'm sure you can tell. And we were almost uncomfortably close to each other in the front seat, and I got in the back, and my head barely fit, and I could not see out the back. So a lot of good things about it, but as, you know, a utilitarian crossover, it's lacking in space, I would say. That would be my biggest ding against it. I think everything else, the powertrain, there's two problems I had with it. So the powertrain, wonderful. The infotainment is a little bit laggy, a lot of menus, you know, within menus, the ride was pretty harsh, so that seems kind of a cold review of it. So let me give you the positive. The build quality seems really good. The acceleration is, once again, you know, electric car, mind-boggling, dazzlingly quick. The styling is actually interesting. You know, I think they did a really good job of styling it. But the ride and the room were a little on the rough and on the tight side.
I thought that the build quality was excellent.
Yeah.
I really did like that. I think the use of the front trunk is awesome. Really good space in the front.
Yeah.
I didn't like a lot of it, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. The thing about, like, you see Mustang, you see GT.
Yeah.
Right? And I just, every time I'm in a GT Mustang, be it like a new one, be it one from 10 years ago, be it from 15, 20 years ago, like they always just make you so special. It's like such a sense of occasion.
All right.
Sitting down low and looking through those narrow windows and seeing that long hood in front of you.
Let me ask you this question. You pull up to a parking lot and you've got a choice of two cars, a Mustang GT or a Mach-E GT. Which one do you take? And this is going to be the car that you're going to own for the next year. Which of those two?
Well, it depends.
No, I'm not saying you, right now. And the price-wise, they're very different beasts, right? Because the traditional Coyote-powered one is going to be a lot cheaper. But I'm just putting you in this scenario. You know, you've been kidnapped, and you're taken to the parking lot, this mysterious parking lot, and they hold a gun to your head, and they say, you have to have one of these as your car for the next year. Which one do you take?
Well, there's a lot of variables that go into
it. Just pick one.
No, I can't just pick one.
I'll pick, please.
I mean, am I young and single?
Right now, tomorrow, I take tomorrow. You are what you are.
Oh, the Mach-E.
Really?
Well, because it's the middle of winter in Colorado. I can't drive a rear-wheel drive Mustang.
I would take the Mustang GT all day long. Like, it would be like that Mach-E wasn't even there.
Yeah, but
I would jump in that GT and I'd...
And immediately get stuck in the snowbank
outside.
That's
fine. I would have so... with a huge smile on my face, I would drive and leave that Mach-E in a cloud of internal engine combustion exhaust with a huge smile on my face.
Well, I was going with this is it doesn't make you feel as special as a standard Mustang, but it is a much more usable car, right? It's got 5 seats, it's got ground clearance, it's got all-wheel drive, it's got a much more usable trunk, it's got the frunk. So it kind of brings the Mustang GT-ness to the masses, which is a good thing. Now, I am a young single guy who likes V8 sounds, right? So like I would love a V8 Mustang, but the Mach-E GT makes a lot of sense for a lot of people.
So you're saying you'd go utility over passion?
Well, if it's my only car.
I wouldn't. I'd go for that Mustang all day
long. Yeah, but then you'd be calling me for a ride because you couldn't get it out of our driveway in March.
I'd put no tires on it.
Yeah.
Look,
you got 3 inches of ground clearance.
The difference in price is like $20,000, maybe $25,000.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the price of a V8 Mustang now?
Google it. Let's find out.
Most of them on the lots are going to be 50 plus grand.
Okay, just Google it.
Here, let me go to Auto Trader. Let me get some real world.
All right, go for it. But then you got to get real world numbers on the Mach-E, too.
I will, yeah.
But I'm saying there's like a $20,000 difference between them.
No, I think the V8 Mustang now starts at 45. Starts at 45. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. And it's probably going to be a manual.
Yeah.
You ain't going to get a manual Mach-E.
But you're going to have a smaller screen and a plastic interior.
I don't care about the screen. God, get rid of the damn screen. As far as I'm concerned, take a big piece of duct tape and cover the screen.
I think what they did really well with the GT Premium starting at 40.
So 40. And this one that we had in here was $60,000.
GT Fastback. Okay, so the cheapest one is 37.
Yeah, I know. They're affordable.
But we had that Mustang in Hawaii that we drove. And I'm
that
such
was a V6.
No, it was a four-cylinder. And I'm such a fan of Mustangs.
Yeah.
And I drove this thing around for a week, and I was so disappointed.
But it's a four-cylinder.
Not by the engine. The engine was fantastic.
No, it wasn't. It sounded
the engine.
It sounded like it was flatulent.
The interior in the Mustang is looking so bad. It's so plasticky, and it feels like it's retro cheap.
I will easily and happily ignore all that with a massive V8 under the hood. Call me old school, and I know.
And then call me a tow truck when you're in the ditch because it's the middle of winter.
Ironically, the Mach-E GT is going to be quicker in a drag race.
Oh, it'll kill it.
It'll kill it, but still take the V8.
Well, that's
because that to me that car has like, you know, that beautiful exterior where like you park it and you turn around when you walk away from it and you're like, wow, that is, you know, that is a badass looking car.
Gorgeous car. Absolutely gorgeous.
Beautiful, yeah.
But completely impractical for most people.
You got 4 seats.
I could not ride in the backseat of a Mustang.
In a pinch, you rode in the backseat when we were in Hawaii.
I hated every minute of it. It was terrible in the backseat. I'm just saying.
You just keep digging yourself into a deeper ditch.
Well, you would literally be in the ditch in your Mustang.
I'd put snow tires on it.
Yeah, and what happens if it snows 4.5 inches? How are you getting to work?
I'll still... Those
exactly.
Snow tires are
there you go.
Amazing.
Yeah, do they give you up to 6 inches of ground clearance in the
It becomes a snowplow. It's V8 snowplow. I'd love that, too. I'd have a huge smile on my face driving
thing
in the snow.
I was not hugely enthralled with the Mustang because, there was not a lot of drama behind it, right? There's not a huge amount of excitement and noise and drama.
You're making my point. Everything you get in the regular...
Having movie. Said that... Yeah.
Long hood, dude. Oh, come on. Look at that. That hood goes on forever in a Mustang.
Uh-huh.
And those headlights, they look like they could burn holes in you. They're so mean.
But if it's my only car, I can't drive it half the year.
I can't carry my friends in it. I can't go.
No, it's just impractical. And that's what it does. That is the cool thing about the Mach-E GT, is it is very practical and it is stupid fast. And it's much cheaper to run. You get the federal tax credit. There's a lot of benefits to the Mach-E GT. You have to admit.
And it's going to be worth nothing in 5 years because battery technology is going to move on. And the Mustang GT is going to be worth a lot because it's the last of the big old V8s.
It's going to be worth as much as the next high schooler that puts it into a ditch is going to be worth.
It's going to be worth a lot more.
Look, if you spend the money on a Mustang GT and get a nice one, like with the performance package.
How about a Bullet?
Yeah. Great.
You can get that. Those are 55 grand
for a Bullet.
Yeah, or
love it. Great. But once again, like if I had two cars, I would get a V8 Mustang and a Snap. If this was my only car, the Mach-E makes a lot of sense.
All right, we're very different in that. Okay.
Makes a lot of sense.
Fair enough. So let's go to the
one. We are not very different. You will refuse to drive a rear-wheel drive car in the winter. You have plenty of cars to drive in the winter
I have a truck. But I'm saying if
there you go.
I'll put myself in this. I can only drive one car for the rest of the year or 1 year, and I choose between the two. I wouldn't even see the Mach-E. I would be like, score! I get a GT, and I would be happy as a clam.
You wouldn't see the Mach-E because it'd be so far in front of you, accelerating away.
I wouldn't even like. What is that? It's some goofy looking, you know.
And then it roasts your doors off.
Goofy looking, you know, car that tried to steal this thing's name. That's what I would say to myself.
Yeah, it's a very look. I'll put it this way.
Have you been in the back seat of that Mach-E?
It's not good.
The GT is.
It's good. I was just back there.
It's not good.
It is good. It's got tight. The scalloped roof.
Okay, if you're sitting in the scalloped roof, you look over to your left. What do you see? For me, maybe my upper torso is taller. I have a weird torso. I'll give you that. I'm like a tall upper torso, short legs. I look over and all I see is roof. If I want to see out the thing, I got to like hunch down and try to look out like the window like this to actually see out of it. If I'm sitting comfortably in the seat and I look over, all I see is a roof.
I would argue.
Right? I don't even see the window.
The Mach-E GT is more of a muscle car than an actual Mustang. Because if you look at what the original muscle car was, it was a family hauling vehicle.
So it wasn't all-wheel drive, I'll tell you that.
It was a family hauling vehicle.
You can't even do a burnout.
It was a family hauling vehicle that they shoved the most horsepower in as possible.
What is the definition of a muscle car? A burnout. And you can't do a burnout in a GT.
Not the definition of a muscle car.
Of course it is. It's V8 roar, it's a V8, and it's a burnout. Those are the two definitions of a muscle car.
In 1965, that's a great definition of a muscle car. 2023. That was kind of antiquated. You're over here. Oh well, a muscle car's got to have four panel fitment, and it's got to.
It's not antiquated. That's exactly what Challenger is. It's the same thing. Hellcat Challenger.
I think what we're seeing here is a little bit of a generational gap, because I think folks my age are really into the electric screamer that will blow the doors off anything of our parents' generation.
You're playing the age card.
It's true.
There's a lot of kids your age who would love a Lamborghini with a big old V10 in it.
There's some of them, but all of my friends.
And there's a lot of kids your age who would love like a BRZ, and there's a lot of kids your age who would love a WRX. True. So don't give me this like, oh, you're old and you're just like. First of all, I was never a muscle car guy.
Right.
Because I wasn't even around as a car guy in the 60s. Right. I grew up in Europe, so when the height of the muscle cars, I came to America just in time for the oil crunch, right? And that was like Chevettes and Vegas, so I wasn't even there for that. It's not even my generation.
But you're trying to relive.
No, I have.
It's like the last gasp
no,
of.
No.
We need a V8 in our car.
So we bought a lot of old cars, right? Mm-hmm. Let's see, what have we bought? So let's talk about the cars that we own right now. Old cars, right? Mm-hmm. We own a Ducheveau. Mm-hmm. That's about as far from muscle car as you can get.
Wait, so why are you so defending the V8?
Because I love it. I think it's incredible.
I like it too, but it's one of my favorite cars. Times are changing.
Yeah, buy it now and hold on to it and make money on it. When people finally understand what they're missing out on versus.
I mean, what is arguably the first muscle car? It's the GTO. What was the GTO? The biggest engine that John Z. DeLorean could shove into a Pontiac Tempest.
First of all, the GTO wasn't like a Studebaker that was renamed a Studebaker GTO, right?
That's another. It literally was.
No, it
was a Pontiac Tempest with a GTO performance package on top of it. Yeah. It was a box you ticked. It wasn't even in its own individual model at first.
They didn't call it a Tempest E, right?
They called it a Pontiac Tempest GTO.
No, it became its own thing.
Which
is Ford's trying to kind of sponge off the name and of the brand of the Mustang by creating this goofy crossover. That's the other thing I hate. I don't want to do a rant, but I'm already really tired of like manufacturers taking what used to be classic car names and badging and trying to put them on things so that people buy them. And you know what I'm talking about, Blazer. Classic example of them, right? What Chevy should have done with the Blazer all day long is recreate what Ford did with the Bronco. Instead, they put it onto...
Yeah, you know, that was a bad move.
Porsche Taycan Turbo. No. You know, call it anything else. Don't call it... There's no turbo in the car. For the longest time, Porsche was so very German and so very strict about their naming that you got exactly what the car said you got. And now, all of a sudden, they decided, you know what, Hans, let's take this electric car and let's call it a turbo. Why? I don't know. But it devalues that history, that brand equity, that provenance of all those turbos that came before them, that every single one of those had a turbo in it. Now, what turbo is in the thing? It's a bunch of software that says basically use more of the battery pack when you're accelerating versus the 4S or, you know, the regular Taycan. It's becoming like a branding exercise versus, as a car guy, you know, a real mechanical differentiator.
All right, I'm going to give you...
That's my rant.
Here's what this sounds like. Ready? Right. It's a branding exercise as to why you can't use the name in it. You know what that sound was?
What?
That was the sound of your electric getting quieter and quieter as these electric cars go zooming off into the future, leaving gasoline well in its dust.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that. I think electric cars are...
They're faster. They're cheaper to run. They're better for the environment in the long term.
So you know what Nissan did? And I didn't do a video on it because it was raining outside very hard. They had, interestingly, a Leaf with their new e-Force all-wheel drive system.
So yeah, you should have driven that thing. Apparently, it's crazy.
I did. I drove it. I did.
Did
I
you?
Drove,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I got a TikTok. I haven't published on it yet.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So it does 0 to 60 in, like, I don't know, 4 seconds or something. But interestingly, and I kind of actually agree with them. So what they did was they used it as a test mule to create an all-wheel drive car. And then they came up with this idea that all-wheel drive cars, because of the instant torque, you know, are sickness-inducing, right? They make people... And I know as a car guy that it seems wrong to be arguing against quicker 0 to 60 times, but what an ICE car will do is it'll have kind of a gradual, even if it's like a McLaren, it'll do 0 to 60 in 6 seconds. It's still kind of a gradual acceleration. There's a little bit of a build into it. With an electric car, you get instant torque, and it just slams you back into the seat, right? And the blood goes rushing out of your eyes. And the first time you do it, you get this huge, goofy smile on your face, and you're like, this is a lot of fun. But by the 10th time you do it, you're like, I think it's making me sick. And if you do it with, like, your mom in the car, she will, like, walk out. She'll leave the car and walk out because she will not find that amusing. A lot of people won't find that amusing. So what Nissan did was they tried to take that instant torque in this Leaf with all-wheel drive. I called it the world's fastest Leaf because I think it is, or at least world's quickest Leaf. And they tried to make it so that it kind of... takes the edge, takes the performance envelope and smooths it out a little bit so it's not so abrupt, so it's not so crazy, not just in a straight line, but also going around a turn, right? So you're not like slamming down all this torque and all this power at the same time while you're going around a corner when you're trying to accelerate. And it works. It's actually pretty interesting. It's an interesting exercise, and I think for a lot of people, it's going to be something that they'll really appreciate.
That's exactly what Mazda said.
For what?
They're like, you know what? We want slower cars. These cars are too fast.
Yeah,
let's make them slower.
That's the headline, but if you dive deeper into it and you actually think about what...
No, it's just marketing. If you listen to what Nissan's saying, because the issue with that argument, Dad, is it's not an on and off switch. It has an accelerator. You know, push on it less than full.
Well, that doesn't help you going around a turn, though, right?
I understand the logic.
Not everybody's Paul, a race car driver, right? Most people aren't that subtle in their driving.
I always hate when a computer decides how I need to drive. I want to have full control over that vehicle's acceleration.
You shouldn't drive any modern cars because your
stability
control is all.
I mean, so the thing we should explain is every electric car does this.
Yes.
Every single one has a torque curve ramp up. This is not like a Nissan invention. It's just a matter of how quickly they allow you to access all
the torque. Well, they also, with this Leaf, they also use like torque vectoring, right?
Right, yeah, which is cool.
So there was more to it than just changing the torque curve of the power delivery.
But, I mean, every EV has a torque curve because you just roast tires and CV axles if you gave 100% of the torque from zero.
I'm just saying, it is, you know, when we had the Model Y Performance, I did that acceleration run about 10 times, and it was fun to like put WRXs, Hellcats in their place with a Model Y Performance, because you will do that, right? But I do see the other side of that coin, and that it can be like, you know, dangerous, right? We did a story a couple months ago where somebody took a Model S Plaid and basically plowed into a house because they lost control of it. You get a lot of weight moving very quickly, and you've got, you know, the potential for a lot of damage. There was just a story this weekend. Did you see that guy who jumped the Model S, right? Did
I know.
You see that? That was then ran away.
That was some kind of stunt, though. But
it was apparently a rented Model S.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then the kid ran away.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so I'm saying you're putting basically
I've got a great solution.
A machine gun in the hands of a lot of people who probably don't have the responsibility to own a machine gun.
And that's what people said in the 1960s during your muscle car era.
Yeah,
they said these cars are too powerful and they're too unsafe.
And it's true. A lot of people either got very hurt or died.
But I think the solution to that is just give it a chill mode, like Tesla does. So you've got, like, in our Model Y, we had a normal mode, and then you click on chill, and
it
tames it down. So I think there is a place for the research.
We're pointing at the Aria. Don't worry. It does not have that problem.
But the dangerous precedent you're setting there is, these cars are too fast. Let's just lock them and chill forever.
And there will be probably governments that'll do that. If you know, maybe not ours, but there certainly might be. I can see governments doing that, or there will be ways that advocates for safety will want that to happen. I agree.
Right, and then there'll be hackers that'll undo it.
It's just going to be something, and then there'll be people, you know, who'll get sued. You know, it's just going to be a Wild West for a while.
But you really don't understand the Mustang Mach-E appeal.
No.
Of the pure silent muscle car.
No.
I think it's pretty cool.
I'm just like...
I do agree with you.
If you're going to make an electric Mustang, make an electric Mustang.
Well, that'd be really cool. Yeah, I'd love that,
too. And then call this the Galaxy. Galaxy.
I do think that probably the Mustang name... I mean, they should have just called it the Mach-E, and then we wouldn't be having this argument at all.
Get rid
of Mustang.
Not even Mach-E. That's also a classic Mustang name.
Well, that would be Mach 1.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Mach is already on a Mustang. I'm just saying, you know, maybe I'm... This time I'll take that. You can swipe. Maybe I'm old and curmudgeon-y,
but I mean,
think a Mustang should be a Mustang.
You're saying a lot of things which I agree with. I think that the actual Mustang is a lot more soulful. It, like I started saying at the beginning before we hit this rant, like I miss that long hood and the low swept roofline, and that's where I don't think I was a little disappointed by the Mach-E GT. It's just the drama of a traditional Mustang. But at the same time, 0-60 in 3.8 is pretty impressive.
It's like the problem I have with it, Tommy, is like you're trying to put a round peg in a square hole. So to me, the Mustang is all about emotion, right? It's all about passion. It's like speaks to your heart. And the Mach-E speaks to your head. And you were having that conversation. You were saying, I like the utility. I like the fact that it's all-wheel drive. I like the fact that I can put my friends in it, right? And so it's like two brands that don't two things that don't fit into one brand. I get it from a marketing point of view. You want to create something that's like approachable and understandable. But the two don't belong together. You know, one is sporty and passionate and fun. The other is utilitarian, fuel efficient, and quick. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean fun. Anyway, let's move on to the car that did get everything right that we've been driving. And that is, I think, probably the best Toyota out there right now that you can buy, which is the RAV4 Prime. And the reason I love the RAV4 Prime is simple. It's because it's a car that I think is the second quickest Toyota that you could purchase right now.
Yep.
Yeah? So let's talk about it. It's a midsize crossover that combines the best of everything. It's got an internal combustion engine, so you can drive it like an engine. But it also has a big enough battery pack where you can get, I think, 40 miles of range out of it. And then that battery pack is not only used to be able to go all electric for 40 miles, which, let's face it, is enough to go to work and back for a lot of people, right? But you can also use it to blow the doors off many other cars because all that battery power is then used to make the quickest RAV4 out there.
And it's completely ruined by one thing.
What's
that? The fact you can't buy it.
I know, it's on
Titanium. I know. I was just talking to someone yesterday
It's too good.
Wanted my opinion on it. Well, it's the dealer network, which is the problem. I was talking to him. He's like, I went over to Boulder Toyota.
Yeah.
They had one on the lot. I was about to buy it, and then they slapped $10,000 dealer markup on it, and I walked right on out. And that's the issue with the RAV4 Primes, is that everyone you see is going to have $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 markups on them.
Dealer shenanigans.
Yep. Yeah, and it's a fantastic car. Love it. It's also, I mean, the other conversation you can have was, would you pay $50,000 for a RAV4 Prime at MSRP, let alone $60,000 with the markup?
So what you're saying, Tommy, and we should have that discussion, is, I mean, this is easy to stop, right? He didn't buy it, and the next person, but at some point, somebody is going to buy it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if we didn't have that person who was going to pay $10,000, so if we all got together here, all of us listening to this, and all of us who, you know, want this to end, the easiest way to do it would be just, we will not pay, nobody will pay over sticker based on some, you know, BS verbiage on the little label that says market adjustment, right? Which is complete BS. It's just greed. Why don't they just call it greed? Just call it dealer greed, right? I want a house payment for my new boat. You know, I want a bigger house. I want to send my kids to a better school. I mean, that's what it really is.
Right.
That's what we're really talking about. Because that money, I don't think that money is like, do you think the salesman then gets a portion of that?
Well,
are they incentivized to try to actually?
I mean, what the dealers will tell you is that they have such low inventory right now, and they have such a difficult time getting vehicles, that isn't boat money. That is pay my rent money, because that's the only way we're going to keep these employees employed.
Didn't we just do a payroll protection program?
I don't want to get into the politics of it. I don't understand. Weren't there dealers
that got payroll protection money just for that reason, Tommy?
Well,
did they get payroll? Did we as taxpayers fund dealers so that they could mark up their vehicles by $10,000? You know, and then throw that back in our faces and say, oh, the economy's bad, supply chain issues, we're lucky to be able to stay in business. Didn't we just give them money for that?
I don't understand the politics of it.
The politics are straightforward.
I haven't looked into it, I should say. As
taxpayers, we just paid businesses to stay in business because of the pandemic. So the way that they rewarded us for that, if you're a dealership, is not by staying in business, but by overcharging for, you know, the cars that they're selling now, and then calling foul on the fact that they can't get inventory. I don't buy that argument, as obvious, so you can tell.
Okay.
You don't want to go down that road.
No, I don't want to go down that road, because the comments are just it's just a very toxic road to go down.
No, I think there's going to be a comment that says, you know, you go dealers, you guys should be charging $20,000 over sticker?
I think after talking to some dealers, there are probably some dealers that do feel that they are unable to pay their bills. And then the whole question is, should the dealer model exist? I just don't want to.
Okay, well, let's talk about, it gets very political very quickly. We don't do politics. We do cars and trucks, not politics. So let's go and talk about the car. Let's say that you are looking for one and you do find a dealership that is actually selling them at sticker. What makes the car so good?
Well, I mean, the amazing part about it is the 42 miles of all-electric range and then the 550 miles of gasoline range on top of that. So you got 600 miles of range, in theory, based on gasoline and electric. You can charge it up at home and basically run it for pennies on the dollar compared to gasoline if you're only running on electric for your commute. That's great. The 302 horsepower is amazing. 0-16, like 5.5 seconds is what they claim. Quicker than a four-cylinder Supra. So it really is an amazing performer. The not-so-good, it's a freaking expensive Toyota.
How about off-road? You just took it off-road. How is it off-road? It is a RAV4, and there's an adventure model, I take it.
Yeah.
Not good?
No, it's got an amazing all-wheel drive system.
Okay.
It's got huge amounts of torque. It's really is a very well-calibrated drivetrain.
But
it doesn't have enough ground clearance. And it's got 19-inch wheels and Yokohama all-season tires. The biggest problem with the RAV4 Prime, which people keep pointing out in the comments on the videos we've done, it's a lot of money even before markups. So the one we're testing is $50,000 for a RAV4.
You know, I want to say the average price of a car now in America is well into the 40s. It's like 45-ish, if I remember reading correctly. You could probably Google it. So you're not that far off from the average price of a new car in America, Tommy. So that argument to me seems like, maybe true that like 2 years ago, but with inflation
running rampant
and running crazy.
This Car and Driver article says a new price in the U.S. in December rose to $47,000.
So you're $3,000 off from the average price.
But I know with inflation, it's a lot of money to spend on a RAV4.
Look, my brain is still like 2020. Right, in terms of what new car prices should be, but we're no longer there. You know, when you can't really find cars in the $30,000 range anymore, let alone the $20,000 range. We are well into the looking glass and through it at this point.
Well, so The other thing which I don't like about the RAV4 Prime is you really want to get the faster charger. So there's two different chargers. There's a 3.3 kilowatt and a 6.6. Mm-hmm. And the 6.6 makes it a lot more usable if you want to plug it in at work in the day and drive home on all electricity.
Or like, can you do level 3?
No.
No, so it doesn't matter. So at least you get either slow or quick level 2 charging.
Right, but the problem is the 6.6 is not available on the base one, which starts at like 40. So you have to pay more for the 6.6.
And I wish they had just put the 3.3 is
pretty useless. Yeah. They should have just put the 6.6 in all of them. Yeah. But I will say it is a fantastic thing to drive. And it's one of the few plug-in hybrids that you can drive on electricity and feel like you've got plenty of power, plenty of torque. It's not slow. Right, the gas engine isn't trying to kick on.
I have a suspicion and I have a question for all you guys out there who know about supply and how much things cost, right? So my suspicion is that there is no difference in actual cost to Toyota between a 3.3 and a, what is the other one, 6.6?
Sure.
So I don't think it costs them any more in terms of like actual componentry to do one or the other. And what they're doing is they're actually like downgrading the 6.6 to get you to upsell they're downgrading the 3.3 to get you to upsell to the 6.6.
Which could be.
Which I always hate when manufacturers do that. You know who does that a lot? That's another one that I don't like, the Ford with the Maverick, right? If you get the $19,000 Maverick, which, once again, unobtainium, but if you want cruise control, which is just software,
right,
and a button, so 10 cents in software, you have to go to the next level. You can't get the base model. You got to go to the XL, I think, and that's a $3,000 up ticket.
XLT probably is the next one.
Yeah, so you got to pay $3,000 to get like traditional cruise control. I'm not talking about lane holding or adaptive. I'm talking about just regular old cruise control, $3,000.
I mean, but that's every brand. Every brand is examples of this.
Yeah, and I hate it.
I mean, for example, I've read that on a Jeep Wrangler, right, the base models like mine don't have power windows.
Yes.
They've got crank windows. Yeah. The crank windows are actually, I've read, heavier than the power windows.
Yeah.
And I would wonder if they're actually more expensive than the power windows too, because they build so many more with power windows that economy of scale comes in. The funniest one I just learned from watching a thing on TikTok, some of the older Volvos, you if you didn't buy heated seats, you got a little blank panel. But you could pop off the blank panel, and underneath were two little buttons,
and those
were heated seats. It was all wired up, ready to go.
So it was cheaper for them to put the heated seats in and then cover it up with a blank.
So what about like what Toyota's doing on like the Tundra, where they're going to make you pay down the line for remote start?
Yeah, that's going to be an ugly situation.
Yeah, that's going to be a bad situation.
I guess the question, and I don't know, you know, those guys know their pricing models better than we know them. But my question would be like, at what point is that going to become so onerous that people are like, I'm just going to go buy an F-150?
Well, yeah, but then what if Ford starts doing it? What if they start following Toyota's model?
And then at some point you might end up with a class action lawsuit.
Yeah,
right?
Or a 1985 F-150.
Yeah, or some attorneys will be like, hey, this is anti-competitive. You know, let's let the DOJ take a look at it. Anyway, let's talk about the other cars that we've had.
So I was just at Volvo in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
I drove two cars, the new XC60 Recharge,
yes,
which is their new plug-in hybrid Volvo,
uh-huh,
and the C40 Recharge, which is a new all-electric Volvo. And what a lovely little thing that is, by the way. That is a fantastic
car. Is that a hidden gem?
Hidden gem, yeah.
Which one of the two?
Both are good. Yeah. The plug-in hybrid's expensive, but it goes like stink. 455 horsepower, mm-hmm, in a little Volvo crossover, which is crazy. And then the C40 Recharge is full electric. It's a little expensive, $59,000. The range is not very good, 225. But it's a beautiful thing on the inside. It's fast as heck. Really nice to drive. Just a lovely car to be around. If you can live with a smaller range, it's great.
So I'm going to say thank you, Volvo, for lending us, for taking Tommy out and flying him out to Palm Springs.
Yep, videos on TFL
EV. In the middle of winter, which is nice. And I have him drive that car. But I would also ask you, if you're feeling so magnanimous, send us one of the Recharges. We've never had one in the fleet.
Well, would you believe there's one coming next week?
Get out.
Or 2 weeks.
That's great. I've been dying to get behind the wheel of one of those.
Yeah, XC40 Recharge is coming to us very shortly.
And then, kind of adjacent to it, we'd love to get our hands on a Polestar, too, at some point.
Yeah, different team, though.
I know. I'm just saying, hey, if you're listening to this and you're a big fan of the show, send us a Recharge and send us a Polestar. We'd love to actually test them. We're doing, gangbusters over at TFL Evie, and speaking of gangbusters, Tommy, did you know that TFL Truck just hit 1 million subscribers?
Woo!
Can you believe that?
Great news. Thank you for watching, everybody.
1 million subscribers, Tommy. You know how hard the team worked to get to that number? How many videos we've produced, how many tests we've done, how hard everybody's worked, and how lucky we are to have viewers that you know, love that channel. So if you guys are fans of TFL Truck, we're going to do a very special thank you 1 million subscriber video coming soon. If you're listening to this, probably already up over at TFL Truck. So
okay. Super okay. Cool.
You want to talk about one other vehicle, or you want to?
Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
I think, and this is kind of speaking of truck, it's a good segue, and this would normally be on truck, but it's kind of a truck-led. Speaking of great manufacturers, Hyundai just lent us for a year, Tommy, a new Santa Cruz, and we've been driving the beans off of it. I was looking for a PG-13 word that I could say. Started with B.
Yeah, lovely. That's a fantastic vehicle, by the way.
I love it. I'm in love.
It's great.
I am smitten.
It's
I love really it. We've got this like sand color.
People on the street are a little hit and miss on it, though. Some people I've talked to are like, wow, that's such a cool thing. Other people are like, Hyundai did a truck? Is it a real truck? I mean, but what I look at it as is a much more practical, usable, and durable Tucson. Right? I love mid-sized crossovers.
That's a perfect
word. Or compact crossovers. Great things, but you can't just throw stuff in the back. You have to worry about, like I was carrying around big tires this week and some wood, and you got to worry about protecting the interior. The Santa Cruz, plop whatever you want in the back and just go with it. And I love it.
There is something about having like a bed that is much more utilitarian than just having a crossover. Like, right? Basically, it's like an Outback with a bed. Which is Baja, but you know,
right. Right,
but this is like Baja's long gone, but it is. We've been getting ready for our new series, Go Big, and so we've been fairing around massive tires for the Excursion and for the Suburban, and you just throw them in the back. It's all the back is completely lined, so you're not worried about like scratching it, breaking it, right? And then you figured out how to lock that tan-out cover, so now you can actually lock it so people can't get into it. It's actually super utilitarian, and then you've got all like the lovely utility. Now, the original plan for this, Tommy, was we were going to go turn it into like an Overlander.
Okay.
But then what happened?
Well, we realized that we just have too many trucks and off-roaders.
No, that's not what happened.
Well, is what happened.
No, that's exactly not what happened. What happened was because of the supply chain issues and shortages, we wanted the base engine. We wanted the 8-speed automatic. Instead, we got the big turbo. I say big, it's not big, but you know, it's still a 4-cylinder turbo. And we got the dual clutch, which isn't grand off-road. I mean, it works, but it's not like, it's like you wouldn't like...
Even if we had the torque converter automatic, buy a vehicle with the low range if you want to go deep into the wilderness.
And we wanted to like put bigger off-road tires on it, put a rooftop tent on it. But now, you know, with this one that is more on-road than off-road based, right? Are you tired? You seem really tired.
Yeah, I'm tired today.
Yeah, you're like about to fall asleep. Here.
I'm not falling asleep.
Here's some caffeine.
I'm just struggling. I'm struggling to see what you saw in the Santa Cruz as like a rock crawler. You know, because I think
I didn't say rock crawler, I said Overlander.
But let's be honest, right? I see this a lot online. People are like, ooh, I bought my Subaru and I spent $6,000 lifting it and putting big tires on it.
Yeah, that's why you want to do it with the Santa Cruz.
Just buy a Ranger or a Gladiator, you know? I hate to say it. The Santa Cruz, what makes a Santa Cruz so good is the beautiful ride quality of the independent suspension and the fuel economy and the ease of parking, you know, and the size and the nimbleness. The second you start going into that world, you're lifting it, you're putting bigger tires on it, you're going to ruin the ride, you're going to ruin the fuel economy, and you're not going to get all that much more capability out of it because it doesn't have a low range. So you can spend a huge amount of money to make your vehicle look cooler and perform slightly better off-road, or if you're going to do that, I argue just buy the vehicle with the low range that was intended to do that.
Yeah, so because of that and because, you know, it wasn't quite the spec we were hoping for, what we are going to do is we're just going to throw some... WeatherTech mats in there, which we just got from WeatherTech. Thank you. We got the back. We got to go pick up the fronts. And by the way, I do love those WeatherTech. It came with the furry carpeted ones, and we took it to the ranch, and immediately they just got toasted, man. Oh, my God. They got so muddy because the ranch seems to have this unique combination of clay and mud that sticks to everything. And makes just for a god-awful mess. And so furry carpets are not good. So I'm super psyched that we got our friends at WeatherTech to give us, you know, the plastic mats that are fit to the vehicle. The back ones fit like a dream. We just got to go pick up the front ones. And we're just going to keep it for a year, and we're going to do a long-term review, drive the beans off of it and see how it holds up, and you know, see if it works. And actually, the fuel economy of the thing has been really good, right? I think EPA is like 23, yep, which is, you know, not grand.
We've been getting about 25, but I do love it a lot. I think it's fantastic in the city, which is where a lot, let's be honest, even a lot of full-size trucks spend a lot of their time. It's got just enough space in the bed to hold a lot of stuff. And you can put plywood in the bed if you need it. It's great. They really did a great job with it. And it's more comfortable than Maverick. The interior is better than a Maverick. It's a better daily driver as a Maverick. I like the all-wheel drive system more than the Maverick in some ways. So even though it's more expensive than the Ford, it does offer, I think, a lot of improvements. And 5,000 pounds of towing, which is more than the Ford.
That's
the
other thing we don't have. We need to put a hitch on.
We got to put a hitch on it, but we'll get that.
And the other thing we did was we took weather. I feel like WeatherTech commercial, but this has just saved my life. So we have put the WeatherTech doggy seat cover on it. Mm-hmm. And so Blaze now, I took him for a run, and he got so freaking muddy, and I put him in the back, and just that seat cover just covered up the seats wonderfully, and all the mud got on the seat cover, and then I just vacuumed it out. It was such a joy. You know, you have a brand new car with 260 miles, and to throw a muddy dog in the back seats is, for me personally, it's just like nails on chalk, you know, it's very painful.
But overall, can't wait to see what else we can do. And we will take it off-road, and we will get it nice and dirty.
And I'm not sure it's better than the Maverick. It's different.
It's better. It is better. I mean, it's
not. I don't think it's better. It's just different. Maverick's a truck. This is a lifestyle vehicle.
People love the Maverick, and I'm going to get a lot of hate for this. And I understand why they love the Maverick.
Yeah.
But I do have some problem with the Maverick, because I love the Maverick because of the affordability of the Maverick, right? And then Ford sneakily raised the price on the Maverick and then made it unavailable for folks to order, right?
Well, they sold out of it.
Right.
But I do have
some problems with that. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, that maybe they should have predicted the demand better if they wanted to do that properly, right? Maybe they should have come up with a way to keep order books open and reduce production on another vehicle. But
like the Escape?
Well, yeah, I just feel like
which it's based
the
on.
Price is amazing, and it's such a good deal at the low $20,000 range.
Yeah.
And then if I wanted to go buy that truck, I just couldn't. You know,
so you feel kind of bait and switch.
And then when I get the expensive Mavericks, I've driven them. I don't like them very much. Turbo Ford.
So in the last like 3 minutes that we have left, right?
Right.
We're almost out of time. So let's talk about the differences. All right. The Santa Cruz is not inexpensive. It's like 35-ish.
Ours is expensive. Yeah, that is the big drawback.
And then the Ford, the expensive one, right, has some issues. First of all, the expensive one is four-wheel drive, which is grand, but
all-wheel drive.
So is the Santa Cruz, but you can't get it with the hybrid. So you lose fuel economy,
right?
Only the front-wheel drive is available in the hybrid. And to me, a truck without four-wheel drive is silly.
But you can also keep in mind, you can get the Santa Cruz in front-wheel drive too.
Right. I'm just saying.
So unique to the Ford.
No. But I'm saying, to me, a truck without four-wheel drive is silly. So the one I want in the Maverick is the hybrid, which gets incredible, like 40s fuel economy, but I don't live in Florida. I need all-wheel drive in Colorado. So it's like off the menu right away. So why? So the fuel economy is irrelevant because I wouldn't buy it.
Unless apparently you're buying a V8 Mustang and then rear-wheel drive is fine.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Yes, it is fine because it was a comparison between two cars.
Got you stuck there.
No,
stuck.
No, it was a comparison between two cars. All right. Let's finish this off. All right.
What's wrong with
somebody takes you to a lot, and there's a Maverick, and there's a Santa Cruz. Puts a gun to your head. You can only have one for the next year. Which one do you take?
It depends how I'm using it.
No. Tomorrow, somebody takes you to a lot and says, I don't like the gun to your head analogy. Hey, Tommy, you've won, you know, the sweepstakes. You can have one of these, but the deal is you got to drive it for the next year. That's the only way we're going to give it to you for free. Which of the two do you take?
Well, it depends.
No, it doesn't depend.
It does depend.
You have to pick one.
We need to finish your explanation.
All right.
Because the Maverick is more trucky. You're right. Like, the bed is more usable in the Maverick. The slanty rear end on the Santa Cruz makes it not as usable. I like how it's perfectly square in the back of the Maverick. The price on the Maverick is better. It just is better, right?
Yes, yes.
What I don't like about the Maverick is it feels like it's really built to a price point, which it is. There's just no way
around. And the ride is harsh.
And the two-wheel drive ride I thought was great. Yeah, the hybrid ride was really good. The all-wheel drive ride I thought was very poor. The turbo ride was really not very good in the truck we had. So I would personally, because I don't need that little bit of extra space that the Maverick has, I would get the Santa Cruz. I like the look of it more. I like the interior a lot more. I think the fit and finish is better, and I like the towing capacity with the turbo. Okay. That being said, if the hybrid was available in all-wheel drive, like you said, I'd get the hybrid all day long. That is a magnificent little powertrain, and it really is a cool thing. What I don't get about the hybrid is they should just do what Toyota does, where they put a second electric motor on the rear axle and then do a system
maybe,
like that.
Maybe Toyota's got that patented. No, there's other cars that do that. I'm sure there's another way.
There are other vehicles that do that. Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I wish I could – if I could go out and buy a $20,000 Maverick right now, I would, right? It's great. For 20 grand or 19, whatever it launched at. Fantastic. But they need to get their production really cranked out on those things.
Yeah. I mean, the longer this supply chain chip issue goes on, the longer of a bigger and deeper of a hole we're digging, right? Because what's happening is that there's much more demand for new cars and there's just not enough supply. And it's going to take them a lot longer to kind of have those two equate to each other once again,
yep.
Equalize. So the last thing, because we're out of time, Tommy, is I've got some good news. We haven't shared this with anybody on the podcast yet, but let's bring it back to electric. Andre told me last night that we've got a VIN for our new Lightning.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, there's a VIN. That feels real. When the truck is assigned a VIN.
Do we have a production date?
Yes, we have a production date.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you know when it is?
April 18th.
That soon?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yes.
That seems too early.
Or maybe it's May. Maybe it's the beginning of May. Anyway, it's the next month or two, and we have a VIN. And when you have a VIN, that means that you're well on your way to actually, like all you Rivian holders out there, if you don't have a VIN, you're... That's all in the air, right? When it gets serious is when they start assigning VINs, because VINs, then there's a whole bunch of like things that have to happen when VINs are assigned, like production usually has to happen. Getting a VIN is a milestone moment, and I'm super psyched. We're trying to work with Ford. Hopefully, we can do what we did with the Tundra, and that is pick it up in Detroit,
okay,
where it's built,
yeah.
And drive it back home, do a road trip with it.
All right.
And I don't think with the electric car you have to worry about breaking it in.
Maybe.
Or a truck.
Probably not. Hopefully, we can just go out and start towing right away. That'd be pretty cool. Well, guys, let us know what you think in the comment section,
right,
or if you're watching this on the podcast.
One more sweepstakes here. All right.
Okay.
Just for fun. If you guys don't know, Tommy manages and runs our TFL Classics channel.
Uh-huh.
So all the stuff on Classics is, you know, from Tommy. So Tommy, I'm going to give you a very difficult one. Somebody says, you've just won the Classic Car Sweepstakes. Okay?
All right. I wonder about the only sweepstakes.
And, and the only rule is that we're going to take you to this parking lot. We're going to show you three classic cars.
Uh-huh.
And you can have one for free,
uh-huh,
but you got to drive it as your only car for the next year.
Okay.
All right, so they blindfold you.
Yep.
They walk you around the corner. There's mm-hmm. a parking lot, and there are three cars in that parking lot. All right?
Okay.
One of them is a classic Mini.
Uh-huh.
One of them is a Duchevaux.
Uh-huh.
And one of them is a Volkswagen Beetle convertible.
Oh.
So which of those three cars do you choose to drive as your only car? Tick, tick. Tick for the next year.
It's got to be the Beetle as an only car.
Really?
Yeah.
Why the Beetle?
Because it's cheap when it breaks.
Yeah.
Parts are everywhere.
Yeah.
And
it's a convertible.
It's a little bigger than the Mini.
Yeah.
And it's a little faster than the Citroen. The Mini and the 2CV are fantastic, but you can't get parts for them very easily. And the Beetle.
You're so practical.
Yeah? Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah. Although my Mini has been very reliable. I just drove it. I drove it over 150 miles this weekend.
Wow.
I added it up. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, you went on a Mini ride. How was that?
It was fun. Yeah, it's good.
Went with a bunch of people who drove way too slow, apparently.
Very slowly.
Canyon Road doing 25 miles an hour.
Very slowly in their new Minis.
And that's saying a lot, because if you're doing 15 in a classic Mini, it feels like you're doing 150.
Yeah, but that would be my choice. What about you?
Out of those three,
uh-huh,
I picked the Beetle, too.
Yeah, it's most comfortable.
It's the most
biggest,
comfortable. It's got the biggest. It's a convertible, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean? Yes, it is a convertible.
If you're wondering, on the Classics channel, I bought a Beetle convertible very recently, which is where this is coming from. The top sort of seals. There's a good quarter-inch gap along the header where wind comes flying in, but...
Oh, you drove it with the top down?
Top up.
Oh, top up.
Top up, yeah.
So are you saying if it rains... Not only wind will come flying
in. You'll get wet, but less wet than if the top was down. Yeah.
Maybe if you've tried fast enough, you might get less wet with the top down than up.
Maybe so.
Maybe all right, so. Guys. Well, thank you for spending this hour with us. Let us know in the comments below, out of Tommy's Conundrum, which of those three classic cards you would choose, if it be the classic Mini, the Ducheveau, or the Beetle Convertible. And as always, check out TFL.ai Studios, where we put all of our videos, our TikToks, our podcasts, all in one place. It's going to get better soon, hopefully. And see you next time. Thanks, Tommy.
Yep. See you. Bye.
Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.